Hey everybody, this is Mike with the Mountain Weekly News. Thanks for tuning in to the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. This is episode number 31, which is being sponsored by Spark R&D. Spark R&D are the makers of the most reliable, badass splitboard bindings on the market. So if you're looking for a pair of bindings to go on your next mountaineering mission, go splitboarding deep into the backcountry, check out sparkrnd.com. This week's special guest is Chad Otterstrom. Chad Otterstrom is a former professional snowboarder. You know, I can't even say that. He's a pro snowboarder. Chad also works as a snowboard coach these days, and he's a part of Academy Snowboards. Academy Snowboards has a lot going on. We'll let Chad give us an update on the latest with Academy 2.0. Along with our interview with Chad, we're also going to look at resort news, gear, weather, and much more. Thanks for tuning in. Again, this is episode number 31, wow, of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. Okay, first up in resort news, today is November 17th, and North America currently has 51 ski resorts in operation. If you're wondering where the most snow is, it's not in Colorado, it's not in Utah, not up in Baker, and it's not in Tahoe. The most snow right now is in the Midwest of the United States. Trollhagen, I think they were the first resort to open this year, the second. They've got a base depth of up to 72 inches at the top of the mountain. Holy cow. Second up is Wild Mountain in Minnesota. They're looking at a 48-inch base depth. And then for all of you up in Canada, Alberta, Sunshine Village is looking at 37-inch base depth. So if you're looking for somewhere to go out of all those places, looks like Sunshine Village is probably the place to go. And then some of those places in Vermont are starting to catch up as well. Here in the Rocky Mountain West, a lot of ski resorts are now open as well. We started with, Copper Mountain, Aspen, all the big boys are open. Here in the Tetons, Grand Targhee just opened. And, I'm not really going to talk about Jackson Hole this year. They've been giving me the shaft as usual. We had Anna Cole on, their marketing director, a few years ago or last year. And, she said she was going to hook me up and they would be willing to work with me. But Jackson Hole is not. So since this is my podcast, I'm just going to decide not to talk about Jackson Hole. Otherwise, again, Aspen's open. All the good ski resorts are starting to open. One of the cool things that's happening here in the community of Jackson Hole, or in Jackson, Wyoming, that is Snow King Mountain is going to be running on 100% green power, wind-powered lifts this year. Basically, they've teamed up with the local energy company, and all of their lifts are going to be running on 100% green power. What's really cool about this is as a consumer, as an electric consumer, I can opt in to pay an extra, I think it's about 3% on my electric bill, which ends up for me, it would be about, $60, $70 a year. And that money in turn will go to running green power. So you might want to look into this in your own city, especially if you have a rural electric company. You can definitely switch over to green power just by giving them a couple extra bucks. So it's really cool to see Snow King, a ski resort, it's going to be running 100% on green power. Snow King's got big plans in the future. They're currently looking at a redevelopment. They've got proposals with the Forest Service and the town of Jackson, and we're really looking to see what the next phase of that community mountain looks like. They had a big event in town last week, and Travis Rice, among others, came to town and said, Snow King looks essentially the same as it did 20 years ago when they were kids riding that mountain. Is that a bad thing? I don't know. Hopefully they can keep it as a community type of mountain, because what's happening now is you have a lot of real estate companies and you have a company that wants to come in and monetize the skiing at that mountain when it's really more of just a community ski hill. So that kind of wraps up what's going on in resort news currently. Next up is gear news. Our man Andrew Tillery out in the Pacific Northwest put together our annual list of the best snowboards for the 2019 season. First up is a kind of unique shape. It's the Libtech T-Rice Orca snowboard. This board is going to be available for $599. Definitely designed for riding powder. It's a directional board, a little bit stiffer, but just a really cool, fun, unique shape. It's got a little bit of rocker between the feet and serious camber underfoot, lifted up nose, just really, really good for pow. So again, this is Travis Rice's kind of probably his secret powder riding board. Never Summer has a similar shape, but this one, the Libtech T-Rice, definitely something you want to check out. Speaking of Never Summer Chairman is up next. Again, this is going to be a $599 snowboard. This is going to come with the Ripsaw profile. I mean, this thing's just gnarly. I mean, if you're a really hard-charging rider, this is definitely the type of board you're going to want to put in, especially the guy that's, you know, just really, really tough on their gear. It's the CEO's board. This is the Chairman Never Summer. Next up, Yes Snowboards. This is the Pick Your Line snowboard from Yes. Again, another $599 snowboard. This one's got a pretty mid to strong flex. Just great. This one's going to be a little bit more of the freestyle, the guy that wants to go fast, hit the side kicker, and just go pretty much anywhere in the mountain. You can still ride POW on this, but I'd say this is more of a resort board. Arbor Snowboards, Arbor Snowboard Wasteland. I think the Wasteland has made this list pretty much year after year after year. This one's got the rockered profile, a little bit of extra lift in the nose. This board's a little bit more expensive. It comes with that $649 price point. And with that, you get that nice wooden inlay top sheet that Arbor's known for. This board's going to be a little bit stiffer on the flex side of things. And just a great board. I mean, consider Arbor one of the best manufacturers out there. Especially with their new factory out in Dubai. Dubai. Capita Snowboards, Capita Defenders of Awesome Snowboard. This is a board that's been very popular year after year. What's cool about this board, it's only $439. Again, another board that's going to be really, really well for the park. If you're looking to press and get your jib on and, you know, spin off the kickers, you've got that. It'll also work in the POW. It's, you know, a little bit more of that cambered feel. So just a low maintenance board. It's going to do whatever the hell you want it to do. Last up, the Ride War Pig snowboard. This one's $459. It is a really short, it's kind of that, it's this directional rocker board, short, fat, wide. It's this new, you know, this new theme that we're going with right now. Mid-flex, really, really fun. You can trench groomers if you're that kind of groomer trencher, whatever. Anyway, Ride War Pig snowboard, $459. Be sure to check out that list, Best Snowboards. If you just go to Google and type in Best Snowboards 2018 or Best Snowboards 2019, that article will pop up for you, as well as you can see the list who we picked for last year's Best Snowboards on there. And then there's links to purchase those boards. So really, really makes it easy. What else do we have on gear news? We put together a list of the best snowboard bindings for the year. The best snowboard bindings for the 2019 season are as follows. First up is the Rome Targa binding. This binding just looks fucking badass. I'm not going to go into detail about what the bindings are. I'm just going to give you the name on these, and you can go to the website for more information. Second up is the Now Drive binding. This one's going to be $329. Most of these bindings are running in that $350 price range. Next up is the Union Strata binding. This one's going to be a little bit cheaper, $279. Following that is the Nitro Team binding, $269. And then Arbor Snowboards. Arbor's new to the binding market, but they've got the Hemlock binding. This thing's pretty rad, $199. And then for the women, we've got the Flux GS snowboard binding. As well, you can go and take a look at the last year's winners on that list. Same thing, just go to Google and type in best snowboard bindings, and you should find that article. What else do we have gear news-wise? Oh man, I just reviewed, the Libtech Split board. Woo! Okay, you've probably been wondering about this. Libtech Split BRD. What does that stand for? Well, that's the Libtech Split board. Basically, what Libtech did is, they've had this rocker camber profile. Actually, that's what Never Summer calls it. Libtech's had their banana, just not a straight camber or not a straight rocker profile. What happens with the split boards is when you have these funky profiles, it makes touring awkward at best. And so if you've ever had that feeling of being up on the skin track and kind of sliding backwards, usually it's not your skins. It's actually the profile of your board is not allowing the board to hold on to the snow surface, and in turn, the skin and everything else is going to fail. So Libtech heard about this from their consumers, and the last review I did, I really kind of laid into them about this. I said, you guys got to make this a little bit flatter underfoot, or the part that, is really contacting the snow. If it's got all these crazy, rocker camber profiles, it's going to be harder for the snow to harder for you to stick to the snow. And then if you think about that splitboard skin that's wrapped around the splitboard, it's going to be harder for that to actually stick to the splitboard if it's got this really super aggressive wavy profile. Again, this is maybe manufacturers need to go out and spend more time splitboarding. That's one of the things I said in this review. I said, LibTech, you guys should make splitboard skins. There's a long pause there. The reason that long pause is if these brands, Never Summer, LibTech, actually made skins, they would change the way that these profiles were made immediately, because they would understand that these profiles might work for resort riding, and they really do work for resort riding, and they're really fun, but they need to be toned down massively for the splitboarding. So anyway, the 2019 LibTech splitboard thing is awesome. Going downhill, I really, really loved it. The only problem going uphill is I still did feel a little bit of that profile. Really what happened is my skin started failing because of this profile. So the profile this year is not as aggressive as it was. It's better on the skin track, but it's not perfect. And it's kind of far from perfect. You know, I know that those guys, Travis Rice, he's not a splitboarder. I mean, they go out on snowmobiles and they go out with helicopters. And most of the crew at LibTech that I've talked to, or Mervin Manufacturing, they say that splitboards are really only popular on years where there's bad snow. So, you know, if you're that guy out in Mount Baker and you're shredding Baker and it's going off, you probably don't need a splitboard. When I lived at Baker, I think I went out splitboarding twice. It's the mountain's so sick and they have so much snow. So anyway, back to the LibTech splitboard. I tried this board with the Spark R&D Arc Pro bindings. I'm going to give a full review of what's going on with those bindings, but basically that's the lightest binding on the market right now. They're so light you can just lift them up with your pinkies. Just super, super light. Tons of new tech. Spark R&D, what more can you ask? But again, I paired this LibTech with the Sparks. I had my trusted Montane skins that I really, really love. And if you look at the review, you can see a picture of the skins failing toward the end of the day. This happened to me on numerous occasions with that LibTech splitboard. So overall impression, I'm giving this board about a 3.5 star. It rides really well, but they got to figure out this touring aspect. Okay, next up is our interview with Chad Otterstrom. Be sure to listen to this entire interview. It is a good one.
Chad, thanks for calling in.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I'm here.
So, right on, Chad. Well, tell us a little bit about your background. For some of our readers that or listeners that might not be familiar with you and Academy Snowboards.
To talk about myself, I grew up snowboarding in Minnesota. Moved out to Colorado in 1995, and have been out here since then in about the same 3-block radius for the last 20-some years. But I've traveled the world as a pro snowboarder, rode for companies off and on, Bluebird out of Wyoming. I rode their snowboards for a while, in between ups and downs with Academy. But besides that, I've been riding Academy snowboards since 2004, I believe.
Killer. And it seems like Academy is really making a comeback in the last couple of years. What's new as of the last couple of years with the board company?
We like to call it Academy 2.0, you know. Hopefully we'll get to Academy X like the iPhone one day. But as far as things have been new, we moved all of our production to the Never Summer factory in Denver, and we are making camber boards out of there. So that's been really big for us, because the quality at Never Summer is definitely bigger and better than ever. I honestly, like I said, I was riding Bluebird boards just a couple years ago, and then JD at Academy hit me up, and I was kind of mostly retired and, you know, being a snowboard coach, and he hit me up and he's like, you want to get back on and help out full time and be owner and, you know, run the marketing, run the team, run, you know, we basically, between him, this guy Chris, and I wear all the hats. I've kind of just been doing that for the last 2 years with him and Chris, and it's been huge for us because we just don't make our boards in China, or not the bad boards come out of China, but when you're halfway across the world, it's really hard to check up on production. And, you know, we're kind of exclusive with Never Summer with our boards right now. So Anyways, yeah, and I'm a video photo nerd as well, so that has kind of helped out with Academy over the last couple of years, because just me being back on and taking pictures of the new guys, and I have stockpiles of all the old stuff since 2000, basically since 2002, because when they started, Matt Peterson, my roommate, was one of the original writers on Academy. So, yeah, it's just been, you know, I look 14 years now of good times, and we actually love what we do. So, you know what they say, when you love what you're doing, that, you know, it's a good deal.
Of course. And, you know, you mentioned Never Summer and, you know, being a Colorado guy, that must be pretty cool to have, you know, those boards being made right down the street, you know, down in Denver. As far as going camber, what's your reasoning for the camber boards? I know a lot of people that have, you know, been snowboarding for a while have kind of switched back to camber, and, you know, Never Summer gets asked year after year why they don't make camber boards anymore. So it's really interesting to see you guys able to make a cambered board or an entire line out of that Never Summer factory.
I've always just been kind of a traditional snowboarder. I like camber, you know, I like, with our board line too, it's more of a cost effective thing than it is just camber. You know, we want to make simple, understandable snowboards for people at a cost effective price, and we can do that with Never Summer. But and just me personally, I like camber, you know. But, you know, to each his own. Some people like, you know, rocker camber and this and that. But we're just going to kind of, you know, we make a flat board, a camber board, a hybrid camber, and then my board's just early rise nose camber, so, which it basically rise twin, but floats a little better than POW. So we just keep our line simple and understandable. I like, you know, I grew up skateboarding, so I just like your normal skateboard that you go to the park and grinds and kickflips and slides, you know. Nothing special.
For sure. Well, you mentioned kickflips. What kind of snowboard boots are you wearing these days? I think I saw an ad in the Snowboard Mag a few years back, and you were jibbing and you had hard boots on.
Right now I ride Burton bindings and boots, but I do ride hard boots if you want to get into that, splitboarding on and off depending on the day and how I'm feeling. It's a little more fun in the spring because the hard boots seem to be a little colder, but you just tour better. And actually this guy down in Denver, near Denver, started a splitboard binding company called Phantom, and he modified these hard boots to ride like soft boots. And if you know anything about splitboarding and touring, high backs and traditional snowboard boots kind of get in the way with weight and flex as far as walking. So the hard boots, you can break out the backs and you kind of feel like you're walking in shoes more than snowboard boots. So going up and down hills is technically almost twice as fast, and if not lighter. But at the same time, you also have a stiff sole in the boot, if that makes sense. So your response is kind of pretty insane. It turns it into a, you know, you basically turns into a Ferrari that kind of like rides like a Jeep, or a Jeep that, you know, you can kind of go both ways. It's like a Jeep that rides like a Ferrari, but you can still drive it like a Jeep, if that makes sense. There we go. That's what I was trying to say. But yeah,
I
don't
it.
Know. So I do ride them, but on occasion, you know. But also, they don't release, so if you tomahawk, you could break your legs. You know what I mean? Not that soft boots release, but it's just they're a little stiffer. But, yeah, it's just something different, you know. To do a factory into a line in hard boots is a little more of a challenge than it is in soft boots. And you can get up twice as fast. But, yeah, I don't know. A little better in icy conditions, too. If you've ever been in Colorado, we ride a lot of like high mountains in the spring and big ice spaces everywhere, and you can kind of kick into them a little better, and you can put crampons on them way easier and things like that. You know, a lot of soft boot brands try to make crampon boots, and my opinion is just kind of, why don't you, if you're going to go that far, why not just ride hard boots, basically?
Yeah. of course, you know, and John, the founder of Phantom, I mean, I think he's got like an aerospace engineer, a master's degree, so he's quite a smart dude with the tinkering. And, you know, I'd never really heard anybody explain the part about doing a 360 with the hard boots, and for somebody like yourself that's been snowboarding for a while, you know, mix it up a little bit, and if it makes it, you know, a little bit harder and, you know, makes you have to land on the bolts a little bit more, I'm sure that's actually quite fun, not just, you know, being able to just throw it and regardless land on your tail and, you know, ride right out.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's just like a little bit more of a challenge is what I like about it. But it technically isn't in certain spots. Obviously, like hiking and then turning, you have way more control on ice because you have that rigid hard boot. But, you know, it's just fun to try tricks. Like, I think, what was it, a couple of years ago, I made the edit when I first got them, and I hadn't modified them yet, and it was sketchy. And then we modified them, and I'm like, oh, these are like snowboard boots, but just with crazy response. And then I think Scotty Stevens came out one day, and we made a little edit at Copper. We were up, jumping up and down, picking tables, doing backflips, and buttering around, and I don't know. I guess we got some recognition out of that one.
And so the guys, like, for people that are working with Phantom, do you just buy a boot from him directly, or do you send him a boot and have him kind of modify everything?
No, he modifies it. He modified mine. He just, you got to buy a Dynafit boot, or is kind of the main boot everybody's riding now. It's a Dynafit TLT6. But, you know, one day a ski company might make a splitboard boot, but that's kind of the issue is, like, there's no market for it, you know what I mean? So for a company like Dynafit or somebody to come out with a boot and, you know, invest tons of time and energy into, like, designing one, I don't think that they're going to get any return on their investment. So they may in the future. I'm not going to never say never, and I really hope that they do. But that's kind of it. But, I mean, to be honest, it stems all the way back to the invention of the high back. You know, I'm pretty sure Jeff Grell might have been a skier before he was the inventor of the high back. And they were, you know, snowboarding with hard boots back then. And, you know, I mean, besides Burton, and, you know, they're kind of like what they were doing. But then when the high back came in, it changed everything. And that was basically invented from a ski boot. I'm not sure, but it would make sense. So I don't know. So, you know, had that not come around, we might have just been stuck with crazy Burton soft boot, you know, slip-in barfoot deals. Or snowboarding might have actually just gone ski boots and stayed ski boots. I don't know. But what I do know is that, hard boots are definitely, if you're a splitboarder and you're serious about it, I mean, I have foot issues because from being old and dealing with stuff, so I can't always use them, but it's definitely the way to go, I would say.
For sure, and a lot of the, you know, the guys that are mountaineering are definitely switching over to that. You know, it's one thing to be your casual splitboarder, but if you start, like you're saying, getting into icy terrain or really start getting into the gnar, especially on the way up, you know, it seems like the splits definitely, the hard boots the way to go. Being a limited market, is that one of the reasons that Academy has not got in splitboards, or are you guys considering that in the future?
No, not right now, just because we're a cost-effective brand, and if we were to do a splitboard, it would be way over our deal, and we just have four boards in our line. We have a plan for some mid-wides potentially in the future, and then maybe a little more directional board, but as of right now, we're just kind of keeping it simple and understandable, and growing with that, you know, we've always been kind of a freestyle park brand, but yeah, I mean, I'm not, like I said, never say never, But right now we're just trying to, you know, get into shops and this and that. But I do know that with Never Summer, I can make the best splitboard in the world. So I have that technology. But we don't have any for sale right now. So I mean, I know you did a splitboard review, and I watch all the splitboard reviews on like Splitboard Mag and stuff like that. And I know I built snowboards in 1995, 94 in Minnesota at a factory there, and I've been involved with snowboard production over the last 20 years. And yeah, so I mean, one day if we do make a splitboard, it'll be the best, but we don't make it right now.
Well, I look forward to trying your cambered splitboard sooner than later.
Yeah, it's going to do switchback 5s and 720s into, you know, aggressive peaks.
course. What's your thoughts on competitive snowboarding these days? You know, you've got a background as an athlete, as a competitor. You guys are making boards that are kind of that freestyle focused. Where do you see competitive snowboarding today, and where is it going to be in the future?
I don't know. Today, it's intense. You know, it's like I'm a judge at the contest. I judge Dew Tour X Games. I'm a trick caller at the U.S. Open. And I guess the reason I got really overly involved in them, I've always kind of been a competitive snowboarder, but it's because I live in Colorado and all the contests come here. So I'm like kind of just by default, I became a competitive snowboarder or actually, you know, succeeded there. But I see it right now. It's crazy. I'm a judge. So basically, you know, style's a factor, like, but it's more just execution, and it's whoever does spins and flips the most on the jumps in the most variable directions, I guess, and then does the most creative tricks on the rails wins. Brands like, or, you know, things like ESPN's doing Real Snow, which is pretty cool. They do that. And then, you know, then you get all kinds of small contests like race stuff, which is, you know, Terry is super into all the racing, and that's become trending as every resort has a competitive bank slalom now. So I like those a little bit more because they bring, like, the people of the town and the community together compared to a big event, which you always have the big event. But, you know, you go up to the resort now, and during the big event, you can barely get by security, where it used to just be, like, U.S. Open, you know, the side of the pipe was just lined with people going nuts. And when you dropped in, you had to, like, ride through a crowd of people, and you'd come out, and then all of a sudden you're at the first hit. I mean, 1998, I made finals of the U.S. Open. That's what it was like. You came out of the crowd, and you're dropping into the half pipe, and you're lucky to get a beer thrown at you or something, which would be very unfortunate now. And, you know, there's security and everything, but I don't really know. You know, I just kind of hang out and judge and trick call and have a good time. But as far as where it is now and where it's going, the way we judge, like I said, we just add up the flips and spins, as lame as that sounds. Put a little create, you know, whoever does that the most consistently and, you know, puts a little diversity twist on it and does the slide bars. I don't want to sound like an uncertified judge. I'm an FIS certified judge, but you take all that into account and then put it all together and give them a score. But what I like about half contest now is I like women's big air. I like women's slope style. I like half pipe. I like contests that try to be different, but you know what I mean? But just because, you know, like, it's just amazing to watch the tricks that women are doing in snowboards now, to be honest. Men, it's just like when I'm a judge, you're focused on counting the spins and flips.
But, yeah, especially like you were saying, the progression on the lady side of things. I mean, you know, I remember 10 years ago, you'd watch a, you know, a woman's half pipe event, and, you know, maybe getting a couple feet out, and it, you know, it was kind of cringeworthy. And now, I mean, you have the ladies are better than most dudes at, you know, your local ski. I mean, just crushing it. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, I really wouldn't want to be a dad to one of those girls that's just getting that rowdy, you know, in half pipe.
No, for sure. It's awesome. Even in skateboarding too, you know, like girls skateboarding is awesome. And it's like men have gotten so good that it's not even relatable anymore, you know what I mean? In my opinion.
Sure.
So you're just like, now when you watch a girl hit a big air jump or drop the slope, you know, like, she's going for it. Like, it's pretty awesome to watch, you know?
The relatable part's interesting that you mentioned. You know, there was a time in the 90s, you know, when I was snowboarding and really first getting into it, where, you know, you saw things in the magazines and you saw competitions, and it was something that, as a Grom and as a young rider, I was like, okay, I want to do that. Like, I can learn how to do the five. I can do a board slide. Like, I can, you know, I remember first entering some of these competitions, and the playing field was pretty level. I mean, you had your guys that were ripping, and they obviously knew how to do stuff. But now I wonder, you know, with the Travis Rice films and all the stuff that we see, it just seems like it's so far removed. I don't know that a kid can watch the X Games today and say, oh, yeah, I can go and throw the triple cork at my local ski resort. Do you think that's changed snowboarding as a whole?
I mean, it's made it serious and not as much fun, to be honest. But, I mean, snowboarding will still be fun, but it's just if you follow that path, you're gonna be working, you know? Like, kids go and I mean, but not to say that either, because, you know, there's kids like Red that live around here. They're just naturally good and kind of just don't do it. They're having an awesome time. You know, that's just where the progression's gone. But it's just separating. You know, who's going to go to a 22-foot halfpipe and just go destroy it? You know, where you used to be able to go to an 8-foot halfpipe, and anybody was dropping in. The decks were always filled. People were always hiking. People were always dropping. You know, like, it's just gotten very specified, or, you know, disciplines where you have to choose, and you have to, if you want to be competitive in it, you have to go all year long. And, you know, everybody's in Switzerland right now riding Saas-Fee, you know, like, on the competitive side, but it's still relatable. I mean, just snowboard competition, I don't think is relatable anymore. Like, I used to watch, you know, Copper Mountain contest with Brushy and Craig Kelly and those dudes, you know what I mean? Like, at Copper Mountain in the early 90s, and then, like, things, movies like Hard, the Hungry, and the Homeless came out, and I lived in Minnesota, and all of a sudden that movie came out, I watched it, and I'm like, I can do all of this stuff in my backyard. And, you know, all of a sudden you're putting logs up, putting rails up. So that's, you know, even in the jib scene, you say Travis, but even in the jib scene now, it's just like, the stuff they're doing is insane. It's death-defying, and, you know, like, Rodney Mullen talks about it when Mike McGill did the first McTwist. He's like, that's neck-breaking. You know what I mean? He lost his mind. It's like, what the stuff Rodney was doing was just, he might sprain an ankle, you know what I mean? And the stuff we were doing in the early 90s, we might have sprained an ankle. Now you do a 20-foot air in the halfpipe, you screw up, you're most likely going to go to the hospital. I don't know. But whatever. I still think it's all awesome. It's just, it's like Travis says in his movie, so far gone, you know? It's more of a spectator sport now, like football, like, I don't know, whatever. But it's all good.
No, that makes sense. How about the halfpipe scene in Colorado? Do all the major resorts still have super pipes or kind of that intro-level pipe? Because here, you know, we're starting to see resorts, I think the closest, you know, super pipes in Park City from here. And so it's just really interesting to see where, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it seemed like everybody had a pipe and people were really pushing for that. Is that still really popular style of snowboarding in Colorado?
No. I mean, we have a super pipe at Copper. We have a super pipe at Breck. And then, you know, the entire East Coast will come out. People come from all over to actually ride one. But those are the only people riding it. You're not going to, you know. There'll be
right.
10 coaches at the top of the pipe every time you show up, and then they'll have their, you know, 20 coaches, and then they'll have their team riding it. And then, you know, the actual people that live here that are riding it are about 1% of the people that are riding it. But, I mean, it's still fun and all. And I think the only reason they're here is because the resorts make enough money to be able to maintain a super pipe, you know. I think Aspen has one, too, or Buttermilk, but. But, you know, places on the East Coast, a lot of them don't have super pipes anymore because there's just too much to maintain a 22-foot half pipe to the point where it's rideable every day, where if you had a 12-foot pipe, you know, it's just quick cut, it'll get beat up, but you can still do a 3-foot air in it. So, I don't know, but, yeah, there's still a half pipe scene here, 100%. Breckenridge, Summit County is like the training, early season training grounds for the entire world these days.
What is your thoughts on doping in professional sports or amateur sports? You know, you have athletes that have, you know, worked really hard and are, you know, at the top of their fields. Is there anything wrong with somebody looking for that that little extra edge?
Well, I got in trouble for it when I was, you know, 20 years ago. I was on Ritalin. Like everybody takes Adderall now, I think it's basically the same thing, but I don't take that anymore. But I was on it and I got busted and, you know, kicked out for 2 years and then whatever. But I don't know, I think it was Rich Goodwin or Shane Charlebois, I forget who it was, I don't want to call out names, but we were laughing about having a modified human division where you can take, you know, performance enhancing drugs, but you just got to enter the modified human division. But I think it's, you know, I think it should be, you know, 100% natural. I don't think that, I think, you know, and I think everybody would agree with that. You know what I mean? Snowboarding got a weird rep because Ross Rebliata got busted for weed or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, that's obviously not, you know, performance enhancing, but Yeah. Drugs and competition, you know. United States Anti-Doping Agency, I've dealt with them before. So is Lance Armstrong. But, you know, I just, I don't believe in it. I accidentally did it. And I kind of, you know, but it's just like, I think humans are better all natural. Everybody should eat organic food and stuff like that, you know.
Are you,
if that makes
sense,
I could ramble on forever.
Speaking of food, I mean, what are you on a pretty organic, pretty healthy lifestyle?
Now that I'm, you know, I'm 42 and I'm trying to snowboard as much as I can, I kind of have to be. I can't eat like I used to be or used to. I can't go to Taco Bell after snowboarding all day or and wake up the next day and feel good about it because I don't feel good. So I do. I try to eat as healthy as possible. You can always eat healthier. I assume it's like Pandora's box, but. Yeah, you know, I'll eat healthy 5 days a week, I should say. But then, you know, 2 days a week, I don't. So I do my best, but I still like eating bad food.
Of course, as we all. Yeah. Well, Killer Chad, I really appreciate you calling in. How can people follow along with what you're doing these days, you know, as a snowboarder and then as well as Academy Snowboards? What's the best places to reach out to you guys?
Instagram, always DMs on Instagram. It's like, you know, we spent the last week getting first chairs all around Colorado and even, you know, newspapers and you know, news and stuff like that. It's just quick, but if you want a constant, up to date, what we're doing, it's Academy Snowboard Co. On Instagram and then my name, Chad Otterstrom on Instagram. And that's about it, you know.
Killer, dude. Well, I really wish you the best. And, you know, when I saw the boards last year at the trade show, or this year actually down in Denver, they looked awesome. And, you know, the fact that you're making them out of the Never Summer Factory, really looking forward. I mean, you guys, what, got three Goodwood Awards or second place in the last 2 years. So you guys are definitely making some moves. So keep up the good work. And, yeah, we look forward to seeing that split board come out from you guys here in the future.
Awesome. Thank you. And I don't always ride hard boots, by the way, too. I definitely I think I use Spark, too. Like, they make good bindings, you know, for the days that you want to be comfortable and not riding an ice sheet. So, you know.
Perfect. Well, I'm glad you mentioned Spark.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks on the good ones. Yeah, we're going to kick ass for the next couple of years, guaranteed. Hype, thanks for doing this interview.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Peace.
Right on. Hey, Mike.
All right, well, that rounds up our interview with Chad Otterstrom. Chad had so much to say about snowboarding. Be sure to check out what's going on with Academy Snowboards. I think that they've got a lot of really cool stuff in the future. I know they do for sure. Okay, well, that's going to wrap it up for episode number 31 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. It's currently snowing here in Jackson, Wyoming. Looks like it snowed about 4 inches overnight. I'm going to go get my split board ready and go for a new tour. I think I'm actually going to take out the new K2 Far Out split board bindings. I think that's what they're called. Anyway, I'm going to go and try the new K2 bindings. What I'm going to do is I'm also going to make a video of setting up those bindings so that we can see just what that process seems like because it's a new tool out there. So anyway, again, thanks for tuning in. Episode number 31 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. Peace.